Welcome, everyone, to the Comedy Sports Podcast with your host, Christine Rolo Capriolo, and today's special guest, the Tamer of the Shrewd, Matt Allswell That Elwell.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Comedy Sports Podcast. I'm Christine Rolo Capriolo. I've got someone from just over the border here today. I've got Matt Elwell from Chicago. Thanks for coming, Matt.
Hi, Christine. Good to be here.
Thank you so much. We're Zooming, but you sound like you're in the room with me, so I'm just going to pretend you're here, and we'll just hold hands while we talk today.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm happy. If you're okay with that, I'm more than okay with that.
Awesome. Awesome. So, Matt, I just start at the beginning with everybody. Where were you born and raised?
Rochester, New York.
Really?
Actually, I was born in Rochester, New York, in a neighborhood called Penfield.
Okay.
And none of these are words I use in my password, so I'm comfortable telling you that. But then I actually grew up in southern New Jersey in Woodstown, like less than an hour away from Philly Comedy Sports.
I was kind of hoping you'd have a great Jersey accent then. Did you get rid of it? What happened?
So I'm part of New Jersey that they say is south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Okay.
So it's not, but it really feels like that. It's all farms, and it was a very idyllic place to grow up. But it's the Delaware Valley, so we get more of that Tina Fey, like, wooder, murder-durder accent. rather than, like, the New York accent that you're used to.
Okay, I see. All right, breaking the mold over there. Got it.
Yeah, Jersey Shore was a lie. Jersey Shore was a dirty, dirty lie, and I'm upset about it still.
I would never watch it. It was trash, but the accent gets
Thank
me.
You.
I just love other accents. So you said you said about an hour from Comedy Sports Philly, Philadelphia?
Yeah, and I actually didn't know it was there until I started doing theater in the area.
Okay.
So yeah, that was my, I don't want to jump ahead, but when it comes to knowing Comedy Sports, like, that was the first Comedy Sports I ever went to.
All right, well, what kind of kid were you? Were you a funny, outgoing kid?
I was a mess, and I was a Gen X, and there was no therapy, like, no one caught it, right? Like, I look back on it today, and I'm like, there were so many signs where someone would be like, you know what, we're going to have you talk to the child study team and get assessed. And I was like, nope, it was just like, rub some dirt in that ADHD. Yeah, you don't really have that.
Oh, my God. My dad still says that. Just rub some dirt on it. My dad still says that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was – so growing up, I was the messy kid, I guess you'd say. I was a smart kid, and so, like, my first kind of personality, I think, was like trying to be the perfect kid or the really smart kid, and I would always ask, like, lots of questions in class. – I was that kind of annoying kid who was always going for teacher's pet.
Okay.
And then, like, I got my first C in, like, third grade. And, like, that was like the, oh, well, all right, if it's going to be like that. And so that's where I started going towards that, like, class clown.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And got in a little bit of theater in high school, but we didn't have a big program. We basically did a musical once a year.
Okay, yeah.
But did other stuff like Olympics of the Mind back then, which was, I think, kind of improv-y in its own way. And so then I was like doing a lot of activities, but becoming a really bad student because, you know, I knew how to BS in a paper, but wouldn't do the reading. So just all this stuff, like, you know, kind of became that guy, and then kind of went to college and kind of wasn't in the theater program, but thought I was by as much time as I spent doing amateur theater.
Okay.
there, right? So, sorry, that's probably a gallon of answer
no,
to your pint
great.
Question, but that, there it is.
That's great. What did you study in college?
Philosophy and English.
Wow.
And I started philosophy because I was going to be a pastor. I wanted to be a minister.
Okay.
And I wanted to kind of, I thought that was a good kind of starting point.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then halfway through my undergrad, I did Inherit the Wind, the play about evolution, mm-hmm. kind of rocked my faith around, and I picked up English, and then that's kind of when I headed off into theater.
Okay.
Was kind of at that sophomore, junior year.
And where were you in school?
University of Delaware, Newark, Delaware. Same university as our president, Joseph Biden.
Well, there you go. Tie it all in. I love it. So then tell me then how you learned about comedy sports. Did you go to see a match in Philadelphia?
Eventually. So I was at University of Delaware, then graduated, had really just no plan at all. And ended up at the Hedgerow Theater in Rose Valley, Pennsylvania, which is this kind of tiny little old stone theater in this mm-hmm. idyllic little community outside Media, Pennsylvania. And two of the actors there were also comedy sports students. And okay. they were like, come see our, you know, they had been indoctrinated into the cult where the first thing you say is, oh, you should come see my show.
right. totally.
So then I went and I saw it and I thought that was great. And, yeah. I, and while I had been exposed to improv in college, uh-huh. like I had done basically kind of like bar prov, but I hadn't really been part of an honest to God improv theater that could teach me the ways of the force. So I was kind of just kind of going around and hacking things up as best as I could.
Okay. Okay. So what did you think when you saw the show? You loved it?
I loved it. I mean, it was a student show. So okay. I did not get the, I didn't get the same moment that like I got in 2001 when I moved, or 2000, when mm-hmm. I came to the second annual Chicago Improv Festival. I flew out for that in May of 2000
okay.
to Chicago to try and figure out what I wanted to do with my life. But it was kind of like, well, let me try this. And while I was in town, I met with a cafe manager here about the potential of working here.
Okay.
And that's where I saw an amazing comedy sports match on stage at the Annoyance. The old Annoyance up above Wrigley Field. And it just like, it was like, wow. Like
yeah.
that's when I saw people at the top of their game. And so that's really, I think, what made me like an improv believer and a comedy sports believer.
So then how long from that moment till you moved to Chicago?
A month. Yeah. So I had the whole like, you know, Saul Paul conversion of like saw the light. And I got the job the guy offered me. And so and I don't know if people would even do this today, but he was like, well, if you don't have a place to stay, my wife and I have an extra room. So literally I moved in with my manager.
Oh my God.
And stayed there for a couple months till I could find my own place.
Nice.
And yeah, 2 weeks later I was, you know, skulking around IO and Annoyance and trying to find, you know, where to start classes, Second City, mm-hmm. and, you know, just kind of, I had just kind of went whole hog with it.
Nice. Then how did you land at Chicago Comedy Sports? You were looking at a bunch of places, you said.
Well, I started taking classes at all those places. The one place I didn't take classes was Comedy Sports.
Okay.
Because I didn't really like, I guess I just didn't have them in, I wasn't getting pelted with advertisements for them. I was getting told to go to all these other places. But I went and I auditioned for them in August of 2000,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sorry. I've got the time wrong. So I landed in the second annual Improv Festival was May of 99.
Okay.
And so by August of 2000, I was auditioning for Comedy Sports and got into the ensemble.
Oh, okay. Okay. Then what was different, you know, doing IO and, you know, all these other theater groups? Mm. What was different about those versus Comedy Sports?
So Comedy Sports had the kind of professionalism that was kind of familiar to me, but it also was very much like, it's a show for an audience. It's about the audience. There's no confusion about that, right?
Yeah.
But I'll tell you the one thing that made it kind of emotional for me is that, you know, I had very traditional, you know, Christian parents, and I didn't want to subject them to a lot of what they would hear and what they would hear me say mm-hmm. In an IO or in an Annoyance show. Or, you know, or a playground show, right? All the places that I played or studied.
Mm-hmm.
But Comedy Sports was a place where it's like, not only would the subject matter be appropriate for them, but there is this, you know, the referee is this intercessor who goes, hey, if you've never been here before, I'm going to be with you through this entire experience and help you enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is what makes, to me, I think, you know, the show sing is that, there's someone along the way, you know, just like that, you know, the MC in a variety of other shows. Like they're kind of guiding you along, and you know that even amidst the improvisation, there is this kind of plan for your enjoyment.
Right.
And that to me is like, you know, my parents could enjoy this show. So I think there was that. And then what I came to really appreciate about Comedy Sports was that there wasn't that kind of capriciousness of you were only as good as the next schedule, right? There was this kind of like, well, you're in now. Now there's a downside to that too, which I think we've discovered. But like at the time it was like, yeah, this is a family. Like you really have to do something to get thrown out of this place.
Right. Yeah.
You know, now those rules started to change and there started to be like a quality floor, which was probably a good thing, but also really started to grate against that. It's all about the love, you know, feel. So I think that's also been part of like my 22 years in Comedy Sports has been how people kind of transform in parallel with how Comedy Sports is transforming and where there's friction between those arcs that leads to some people getting hurt or surprised or caught off guard or, you know, the organization getting caught a little flat footed and not quite realizing that the world's changing around it.
Hmm.
You know, because that's kind of what I see is like the attitudes of leadership change and what they want out of the show changes and what they want out of the ensemble changes, and the ensemble and the individuals and the generations in that ensemble also have their own expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that is just this really kind of amazing swirl. And for me, as I look at like politics right now in the world right now, I go, wow, Comedy Sports is kind of a microcosm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting microcosm, and you can kind of peer into it and see how even the most innocuous misunderstandings can kind of cause fracture, right? Or this is always the way it's been. And the people who are saying that have only been around for 5 years. And so those of us who've been there for 20 years are like, yeah, well, that's cute. But, you know, or the other side of it is when people are like, we have never done anything like this before. And the old timers are sitting in the back of like, hey, you remember 2003? Oh, yeah, this is going to be terrible. There's that kind of feeling of like Comedy Sports kind of continues to reinvent itself.
Huh.
And who you are at one point in it and who you are at another point of it, like that can always come into conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And that's become really interesting to me as I kind of come to the end of my time with it, of looking at how it is that it's a community and it has all the kind of richness if you were, you know, that a sociologist would kind of find in any community.
Wow, you're getting deep, Mr. Philosophy Major.
I really hope that you can just edit this down to like a sensible 15-minute show, because otherwise it's just going to be like this guy just going on tangents.
I'm like, what is he saying? No, I want like an example of like, so if you've been in for 22 years-ish,
yeah,
right? And you're saying, you know, the world changes, people change, you see these changes. How does that come into conflict then within, I don't know, a show or the ensemble?
Well, I mean, my appreciation is pretty limited to Chicago.
Sure.
And so Chicago is a microcosm within the larger microcosm of CSZ.
Sure.
And also that Comedy Sports is kind of liminal in Chicago in that it's yes, it does have occupy a space in the world of CSZ and Comedy Sports, but at any given year, it is far more aligned to what's going on in the Chicago improv scene than it is to, you know, what's going on at Championship, right? Like it achieves that liminality in a way that other improv theaters, other Comedy Sports theaters don't, because of the nature of the scene that we're in and our kind of baggage about validating ourselves to that scene.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, baggage that we carried in different years, depending on the, you know, the disposition of the artistic director.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you started in, you said about 2000, 2001?
August 2000, I started as an ensemble member. And then July of 2001, a position opened up on staff right before the 2001 championship, which we hosted.
Okay. What has changed for you performance-wise from then till now? What have you noticed in you?
Oh gosh, in me. Finally started seeing a therapist.
we all have, Matt. We all have.
Oh my God! We were allowed to teach improv without having a therapist. Like, I really think that today it should be like, oh, you're going to teach with us? Okay, great. And you know, can you get a letter from your therapist saying that you're in therapy? Because I mean, there's so much that you do that holds up a mirror to people in an improv class that if you're not clear, then that mirror is cloudy and that literally harms other people, right? Like, if you're not solid, and not by solid, I mean like some quality standard, but just that you have a solidity to you where other people's stuff doesn't rock you, right? Then you can create that lab where other people can have their stuff. But if you're messed up, then all you're doing is like just lighting a fire that other people burn in class. And so I would say for me, what's really become important to me is teachers as kind of guides rather than sages, right? That I really now am trying to cultivate in myself a person who says very little, relatively little in class, and is really throwing out a game, having people play it, and doing that same Spolin, like, you know, we just played three objects. Did you touch three objects? Like, that's the debrief. Not, oh, I thought it was funny. And when he played the pirate, that was really good. None of that. Oh, sorry. None of that stuff.
Okay.
y'all beep, right? Y'all have beeps?
We beep. We beep.
Okay, cool. but like, so that's like important for me. And then as a performer, I would say this. I think I have over 22 years and it has been recent. So it's not like, like I spent a lot of years, I think, toxic. As someone who really was playing to get an audience to like him.
Sure.
As opposed to someone who was playing to like share a ball and share a game with other people. And really, like, I must say that I have a little bit of an issue with the sensibility of our job is to make our partner look good because I feel like there's also something manipulative in that. Because you can't say my job is to make a partner look good without the hidden assumption that my partner will not look good without me, which means my partner needs me. So I'm not a gift, I'm a crutch. Whereas if we really believe that everybody in the scene is there bringing their fullest selves and we can celebrate each other as full selves, then I think the table manners really fit and it becomes less like, oh, I'm going to do this to help them, which feel like help can be such code for like, get them out of the trouble they've gotten themselves in. Aren't I a great person for doing that for that poor person there? Right? Like that noblesse oblige of an improviser, where instead of going, no, they're awesome and they made a choice and now you're going to make a choice and together we're going to celebrate each other through these choices.
Right.
It's a gift, you know, it's a gift to improvise.
Right. Well, you could look at it, you know, through a different lens and saying, I'm here to make the other person look good is just another way of saying the show's not about me. We're a team.
Right.
I think you nailed it when you said, like, at the beginning, you just wanted it, I want to be funny. I want to be me, me, me. But the better you get, you realize it's about the audience and it's about a team effort and making each other, you know, look good. Everybody look good, not just me.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm loving that. I'm loving this conversation. I never get to talk about this stuff like this. You know, so Christine, let's just do this and not have a podcast every week. Let's just chat improv theory.
Sure, whatever.
You know, I think what's wonderful is the idea of how do we create, and this is kind of what I'm working on now is kind of like my next thing is like, how do we create an improv experience that removes as much intention as possible, as much intention outside the scene. So my job is to just be here, be my full self, and celebrate others, but not to try anything. Not, you know, maybe that's BS, because maybe what I'm really saying is I'm now relying on the reflexes I've built over 20 years of trying to make the audience look, you know, trying to do this, trying to do that. But there's a clarity, like my new shtick is clarity, continuity, and co-humanity. And so I see that everywhere. And I feel like in improv, clarity is when we remove all the voices of our teachers, right? And we're kind of not hearing any other voices in our head. But that process has prepared us to engage in a very clean and unencumbered way I don't know.
Man, you take this deep. Woo!
It's probably not very useful for me to go on a tangent and then be like, I don't know. Maybe that's, yeah, that's all.
I don't know. Did you catch any of that? I'm not sure.
Did you catch any of that? Meanwhile, you can hear me smoking a cigar in the background. I didn't mean that makes sense. Two people up. Oh, God.
So what do you think is your strength as a player? And I guess I'm asking not such a deep level at first. Like, are you good at scenes? Are you good at, you know, give me the shallow version first.
Yeah. Great question. And this... I have the anxiety of being no. I think it's like I know I did okay with references. I was usually the trick pony of like he can do Shakespeare, he can rap.
Okay.
So I was like I would find myself in those spaces. And then at the very beginning of my career, when I was taking IO classes and Second City and Annoyance classes, you know, when I was really kind of in it 7 nights a week, then it was scene work. Like I could really do, I think, good scene work.
Yeah.
As much as I had made it kind of solipsistic. Nowadays, and I really credit Jason Geis, the artistic director here in Chicago, for this, is like, I think I'm playing with kind of a goofy dumbness that's just very fun, just very kind of like stupid and joyous and not kind of overthinking it.
Yeah.
And so I think what I've really endeavored to do, and I think I did this, which is why I'm kind of complete now, is that I think I'm the kind of player people like to play with or don't mind playing with.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think that was always the case.
Oh, why do you say that?
I think when someone is there struggling to make sure they get every laugh possible, that's just kind of exhausting, right? And also,
yeah,
when
sure.
someone's taking it too seriously, like I was definitely the player on the bench, like who wanted to beat the other team and wanted to win and wanted to be the last person called off stage, in the close. And so I would be calling games basically to beat the other game, you know, and to balance the show. Like it was always about the show and what would make us win in the show, as opposed to like, hey, would it be fun if we did panel of experts? Yeah, let's do it. Right. Like I think the joy for me wasn't there because I was so like I had no sports. I wasn't a sports guy at all. So then I found comedy sports and unleashed this competitive streak that I did not know was there.
Well, that's funny you say that, like, because when I talked to Dave Gaudet or Gaudet, whichever he prefers, he said he's very competitive and he thinks he brought that and kind of it took over in Chicago that he was very competitive. And now that's kind of how the team is. And you're saying the same thing.
Well, I mean, Dave and I have worked closely together for 22 years. I work for his other company on Q.
Yeah.
And Dave was my Darth Sidious. You know, like I certainly like learned all the dark ways of the Force from Dave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I say a lot, Mick Napier taught me everything I needed to know about improv. Dave taught me everything I needed to know about professional comedy.
Mm.
Like what you need to do to consistently get an audience to react positively and come back. Like the moves you need to make on stage, the different levels. You know, the need to create change over the course of the show, the series of crescendos, like all that was Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And which is great. And I think, you know, and that doesn't necessarily mean that he and I agree on everything. But I also see that like I think that led to an improv that or to a comedy that was very kind of hard and outcome focused. It was a hustle, right? And it was like it was like, make this audience laugh even if you're not, right? Like,
like
get it done.
Yeah.
And that tension, while it would consistently, I think, produce good shows, that was one of the things that over the arc of the 20 years did start to, I think, wear on younger players. That wasn't kind of the space that they came from.
Yeah.
Of, you know, because that's not kind of the story of Chicago, right? The story of Chicago is like, it's about the art and, oh, we found this cool pattern. And it's like, dude, people are leaving. Like, they don't care about your effete cerebral improv. Like, look at what the crowd is like. It's an oil painting, dude. Do something. So those instincts that I got, I credit to Dave, but I also know it made the show more work than play. Mm-hmm. But it's like, yeah, because people were paying $15 a ticket. Like,
right.
So there's all that kind of nuance to, like, what is this experience? What are its values? And then what are we doing and sacrificing to achieve that?
Mm-hmm. Now, all the while when you're doing comedy sports, was that your full-time gig? Or did you also have a job outside of the theatrical world?
As of July of 2001, I was full-time with Comedy Sports.
Okay.
And so now I wasn't full-time like some of y'all Milwaukee players,
yeah,
where it's like they're literally playing full-time. Like, God bless.
Right.
I was full-time in that I was doing PR in the office, and then okay, I was doing education in the office.
Okay.
And then I was doing – God, then I was the artistic director, and then I became the president of the company. And that's when I left to do the executive director gig for CSE Worldwide.
Well, now talk about that. What does that mean for our listeners who are not familiar with the, you know, the makeup of the comedy sports, you know, government? What mm-hmm. what does that role mean?
Well, first of all, how dare your listeners not know this role?
I've been trying to get them to figure it out, but
it's like the civics class no one ever asked for.
I know,
comedy,
right?
Sports policy.
Right, comedy, yeah, sports policy.
Well, so, yeah, and I only discovered this world when I started, like, as artistic director and then president of the company, I began representing Comedy Sports at, you know, representing Chicago at CWC, the Comedy Sports World Championship, and shareholders meetings. So I started to kind of see the sausage being made.
Mm-hmm.
And so for most rank-and-file players, like, they don't necessarily need to even – know what this is, and might just be happier if they don't. But but here's the gig. So Dick Chudnow, who you all know as the you know, the founder of Milwaukee Comedy Sports and the founder of Comedy Sports, the
right,
creator of the intellectual property, licensed this show out. And then a time came when the kind of member companies came together with him and tried to figure out, like, what's going to be the structure for us? How are we going to be responsible to each other? Because at one sense, it was kind of initially set up as like Samuel French, right? Like, there was a play called Comedy Sports. It was an improvised play, but it was still a play. It was a brand name, and mm-hmm. it was a style of performance. And, like, you paid for it. You paid a certain amount of money to Dick, and you did it. But then it was like, okay, but we're all in an open run forever, and we're building a community. And as our world got more connected, I mean, remember that, you know, what was it, 10, 15 years of Comedy Sports happened before really there was widespread use of the internet, right? So it was
right.
Like you could live your whole life playing in Milwaukee and not only never play in another city, but not really be conscious that you're part of a large organization.
Right.
Like, you play here. Oh, other people do it? Oh, that's interesting. But it was like, it was so far removed from your experience that it didn't matter, right? Come, you know, then come like Facebook and like this uber connected world where players are going, I can really talk to anyone who plays comedy sports in any city in the world. And so that changed how we saw ourselves. Anyway, this led to a creation of what was called the World Comedy League, and the managers basically kind of having this entity that they would then pay their licensing fees to, and that would then turn licensing fees over to Dick. And what that allowed was this kind of focal point, which could do advertising for them, could kind of facilitate conversations. And so then we kind of start to see this manager class of where the managers are like making decisions collectively, instead of like, well, you run your Comedy Sports and I run mine.
Mm-hmm.
But there's started, and this is not like, this is by no means done work, but this kind of consciousness of how you run your Comedy Sports and the quality level you do Comedy Sports at is going to necessarily impact how people think about my Comedy Sports and whether or not they go to it, right? You know, we always kind of wrestle with the metaphors around Comedy Sports. Like, is it more like baseball? Or is it more like Blue Man Group? Or, you know, is it more like some other kind of theater piece?
Mm-hmm.
And what we really try to wrestle with is like, well, how is it perceived? Like, you know, we always kind of deal with this thing around, is it family friendly? Is it all ages? And baseball never has to explain that.
Right.
You know, like baseball could just be baseball, and no one ever, you know, no one from like, if the guys in the office all decide to like take the day off and go to a Cubs game, they don't go, I don't know, like, I've seen kids there. Are we sure baseball's for us? Like, it's baseball.
It's baseball.
But somehow in comedy sports, the moment we go, kids are welcome, they go, oh, well, then will I enjoy it? I don't know. Do you enjoy food? Kids eat that. You know, it's like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Like, we did it right, guys.
Right.
So I think for me, what's been really interesting about comedy sports is that it exists and how it is perceived by the audience, but it's not nearly ubiquitous enough in its marketing, its advertising spend, that there is a shared appreciation for that. Mm-hmm. Like if I say Blue Man Group, you get a picture in your head of a guy in blue face
right.
who is beating drums and the drums are exploding paint into the air. Right.
Right.
And no matter who I was talking to right now, if they were a US citizen who was remotely near an urban center, like that would be like, oh yeah, Blue Man Group, I think I've seen them on TV or something, right?
Right.
But they wouldn't be like, oh yeah, but in my show, it wasn't a drum, it was a harmonica, and it wasn't Twinkies that they ate. They ate, you know, a roast beef. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't have that same variability that sometimes we have in comedy sports, which you can argue if that's good or bad, right?
Yeah.
In terms of at least brand awareness, right? It's like, to what degree does this show really need to feel like a sport, which is, it's not like, oh, you're playing football at Soldier Field, which means, you know, the end zones are next to each other, right? You know, it's like the end zones are always the same distance apart. You know, there's a standard to it, whereas there's much less standard to our sport. And so does that benefit us or does that make it harder to tell our story?
Huh. And so your role was to discuss that and come up with a solution?
My role was to complain about that for 20 years and then leave. That was my role. Like, hey, you know, we could really make this more of a sport if we played it more consistently. Nope. Okay, bye.
I'm out.
You know, I mean, it's like, it's just part of like figuring it out, right? Because it's also theater and individual theater directors want to make their mark on it and they want it to reflect their community. So like even like my partner and I were in a different city. We were in California and we were watching a comedy sports match. And I said, you know, what did you think about that? And she went, it's a California show. And she had grown up in California. And so her point was that there was a pacing to that show that like you mentioned, Dave Gaudette, like sometimes if he and I are watching comedy sports in another city, half my job is just keeping him from rushing on stage and pushing the show along. Like, because he knows how to keep a comedy sports show moving. And we'll watch refs take a show into 2 hours so they could say five extra bits and want to scream, right? Like, we have a pace in Chicago that is really important to us.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's like, yeah, that's how the Chicago audience consumes entertainment.
Right.
But fundamentally, the superpower of comedy sports is it reflects its market.
Sure.
Right. And so what people, you know, if we're really going to make a show about the audience, we're going to make a show about that audience and we're going to meet that audience where they're at. And honestly, our players are students who have emerged from that audience. So it's all going to feed back on itself. It's all going to be a part of the community more than it's going to be a part of some kind of ideal, you know, platonic form of comedy sports.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So you've spent the majority or all of your comedy sports career in Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are your favorite games to play there for you? He laughed.
My favorite games for me that... see, what jumped in my mind was Hey Morty, which is my favorite game.
Hey Morty?
Oh my God, Hey Morty. Explain. Hey Morty! Do you not know Hey Morty?
I don't know it. Explain it.
Oh my God, Kyle.
Oh, Kyle, do you know Hey Morty? What's going on? I'm left out of the party. Explain Hey Morty.
I have no idea.
He just said he has no idea what you're talking about.
Oh my God, I'm coming to Milwaukee.
What is Hey Morty?
All right, so this is very reminiscent of the last scene in Seven. It's like, what's the box? Oh, the worst game ever in comedy. It's the Malort of comedy sports games. Hey Morty works like this. So we have our base scene, and at any given moment, a ref can blow a whistle and restate a word that a player just said.
Okay.
And that player must do like a 1950s Catskill era joke about using that word. So it works like this, right? I'm walking along, and let's see, can you like say a word, say tweet, and then say a word, any word that you want.
Okay. Tweet, grocery store. That's two words.
That's fine. That'll work. It'll work.
Okay, tweet, grocery store.
Hey, Morty, did you hear the one about the grocery store?
No, we never heard about the one at the grocery store.
Oh, then you're not doing your job. You should be a canned. And so the end is when you and I and Kyle and people from other rooms of the building run on stage and go. And this is the part I love about it, which people I don't think do well enough, is we snap back, like violently snap back to the reality of the scene before the joke. And that contrast, that snapping back to the English drawing room or whatever reality we had, is what nails it. That's the punchline. That's the real punchline.
Right.
And so if you don't do that, you know, that's why people are like, I don't like Hey Morty. I'm like, try doing it well and then say you like Hey Morty. Because that's really what makes comedy sports work, is there's a magic to them. And if you don't know that spell,
right,
then you miss why we're doing short form. We're doing short form because these forms have little nooks and crannies in them that just shock an audience into laughter.
But what I'm hearing about Hey Morty is there's a bit of a pun going on there, yes?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a pun game. It is a schlocky schlocky pun game. Yes. Oh, you don't like the puns?
Oh, I'm so bad at them.
You know what's funny? Like, you asked me before, like, what draws you to comedy sports?
Yeah.
And, like, I think that's where you really find the gap between improvisation and comprovisation, uh-huh. is that in comprov, it's just, like, what's joyous and funny and stupid? Like, mm-hmm. can we do puns? Sure. Can we do juggling? Sure. Like, we're just going to kind of throw as much at the wall as possible and get a mural out of it. We're not going to kind of, like, no, it has to be this scene work and we have to get the laugh through here. It's like, yeah, we can do a joke, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, the first thing I heard in Iowa was all these things that we don't do,
oh.
right? It's like, well, we don't really do jokes. It's not about the jokes on stage. And it reminded me of, like, you know, so I told you, I think before we got on air, that, like, I was going to be a minister growing up.
Right.
And one of the criticisms of the church was the first thing we tell people is all the stuff you're not allowed to do. And then we go, welcome to the joy of the church. you know, and I think one of the things about improv that's so weird, especially like in the 2000s, was like, it was a lot about like, no, we're too good for that. And it's like, you're too good to have fun in a comedy theater.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I think that's the other thing about comedy sports is it's like, more often than not, the answer is like, yeah, do it.
Sure.
You know, who cares? Like,
yeah.
there's no like art gallery crowd that's going to like go, oh no, I'm sorry. That's not smart enough for
it's
us.
It's too highbrow.
Either good or it's not, you know?
All right. Now, are you into the music games in Chicago? I hear Chicago's huge in the music.
We're very blessed in Chicago to have had a slew of just amazing music directors, mm-hmm. and to be able to afford that talent. And a lot of it comes from drafting off Second City, because there is a industry here. There's a small cottage industry for improv keyboardists, to the point where at one point in Chicago, we actually had our head music director teach a class in music directing on keyboard. There was just too much need. So that's a long-winded way of saying, yeah, no, I love them. I never did like Baby. I was never kind of one of the top tier musical performers, but like, I love that. I loved improvised rap. I was part of an improvised hip hop group,
cool.
That Renee DeCasnoy was a big part of. For people who remember, Renee was a huge part of the Chicago scene. We did a show called The Rapture, which was, basically improv hip hop.
Oh, awesome.
So it's kind of like a Broadway musical long form, but instead of the music parts, it would be, you know, you would just jump into an improv hip hop song about your character, your situation, or what's going on. And you do rap battles between each other. So, yeah, I could have answered that with a yes, and I didn't, but there you go.
Well, so let's turn the comedy sports page. You've recently announced your resignation and retirement.
Yes.
What tell me about that? You've had it. You're out of funny.
Yeah, well,
did you use the last joke?
So I've been doing it for a long time, and like one of the things I actually said to Dave, was I've ridden all the rides, you know, and I also feel like you know, it's getting to a quality level where it's a lot of work to consistently be that good. And so there's also part of me that's like, this show on Thursday, that was, it was the best virtual show I had done in, so like 2 years, the best show I had done. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's just like in my gut, it was like, it's not going to get better than that. Hmm. Like if I resign at this moment, if I retire my jersey or whatever, then, you know, I will be able to go out on like a high note.
Right.
And that was just really important to me to be like, you know what? That's it. That's the moment. And it just felt right. And there's people who've been in comics for a lot longer than me. And for them, it's still exactly where they want to be and need to be. And for myself, I feel like I'm kind of like, I'm like running at a sprint to catch up with other people jogging. And so it's like, okay, it's, I think I'm good. Like, I think I'm ready to kind of be a retired improviser, or, you know, I've also really gotten bit by the improvised drama bug and I want to play with that. I'm also, you know, now, you know, approaching, you know, building this own company of mine that's really about like, you know, what unites improvisation with all other art forms to help us be more human.
Hmm.
And so I'm just like, there's just a point at which it's like, I've got too many things going and I'm trying to define myself in too many ways. And there is just such a bliss in letting go of big things, you know?
Sure.
So, I wouldn't say I'm out of funny, but I'm probably out of professional grade comedy sports level funny. And now I'm going to be the, like, the funniest guy at the office funny. You know, like, I think I'm going to downshift into like that territory.
So what's, you said,
and relax a little.
What's your next thing then? You mentioned doing like still some theater things. Are you going to stay in the theater world? Or are you going to office job it up? You got a cubicle. That's it.
No, it's funny. Like, I have expanded my relationship with my biggest client. I do consulting. You know, I told you about this kind of continuity, this clarity, continuity, co-humanity thing. So there's a whole kind of thing around that I do called play polarities, and it manifests as training and coaching and consulting. And mm-hmm. I have a couple clients for that it will position me to kind of build that. And so I want to focus on that. But then there's also a side of the improv stuff where I really just want to kind of do my own thing, I think. And I'm not entirely sure what it'll look like, but I think it'll look like a much smaller, different thing than comedy sports. So mm-hmm. it's like, and I might not do it for a while. So it's also the kind of thing of like a little overwhelmed right
sure,
now.
Sure.
Because comedy sports, I mean, you know, like there's rehearsal, there's the shows, there's doing enough shows so that, you know, you hold your spot in the ensemble because there's, you know, there's, I think one of the things I really admire about where Chicago has gone is that there's a real standard of, you know, what is it to be doing enough here? And that means that, you know, if you're engaged in the show, you're actively engaged in the show. Whereas, you know, it used to be 10, 20 years ago, like, you know, there was just this class of we've been here forever people who could kind of sit in the back and murmur at everything that every change that people were trying to make, but not actually, you know, jump in and bail water. And I think now there's a really clear, like, hey, if we're going to be a part of this, we're going to be at least this invested. Mm-hmm. And I think that's healthy. But I also think that it's healthy for me to go, yeah, I've done it. Like, I don't need that pressure, you know? And I don't ever really need to do five things again. And we do that every show in Chicago.
Oh, you
and,
do?
And
okay.
When we don't do five things, we do six things.
Right, right.
And so, Christine, I've probably done a million things.
A million things.
I am done.
I'm over it.
I am so done with Splooshy Splooshy, I cannot tell you.
Oh, Splooshy Splooshy.
Oh, my God. But what flavor is the Jell-O? Nope, I'm out. Good night.
I'm out. Over it.
Goodbye.
So, overplayed suggestions, huh? Yeah, but you know, you play it for the crowd, right? You don't tell them you know it yet.
I think that's what it is, Christine, is that don't stay in comedy sports if you're tired of playing for other people anymore.
Right.
Well, you know what I mean? Like, if you've kind of played that out and you're like, I just kind of want to relax and, like, be a little more self-indulgent. Like, you know, because Comedy Sports is like, people are paying for this and they're paying good money for it. And so they get the very best show. It's not like, hey, we're going to do a jam and what happens happens and it's no big deal. Like,
right.
I think what I'd really love to see, and I don't know if I'll be a part of this or not, because I frankly have plenty to do, but like, I would love to see a community improv movement, which is a lot less about product and a lot more about community.
Hmm.
And so it's like, you know, like you're not trying to like, you're not trying to support a theater. You're not trying to do all the things that we have to do in Comedy Sports to keep the lights on. You're just literally creating a space for people to come play recess.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, almost like really kind of touching on that part of me that misses the pastoring that I was going to do, you know, that I left for college to do.
Right.
And still wanting to create that space where people can feel, you know, unconditional love and support and, you know, be a part of something that is a force for good in each other's lives without having something to prove to an outside observer.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know what it looks like, but I keep tinkering with it in my head.
Yeah. You'll figure it out.
Thank you.
That'll be the next thing. You'll figure it out. That's awesome. Wow. Well, listen, we're going to play a couple games real quick here.
Are we?
We are. I mean, not like up on stage perform games, but a little get to know you games here. Yeah, that would be weird. I'm got to figure out how to do it. How to do a comedy sports show with no visuals on a podcast. I'm going to pull out two names of two different games here. And mm-hmm. You tell me, if you had to play one, which game would you rather play in a show? All right. And you can explain the games to our listeners here. So I have Newscaster and Switch Interview.
Oh, Switch Interview.
So, without a doubt. Tell me about it.
Oh, God, without a doubt. Yeah. Do you want to explain them? You want me to explain them? Or?
You go ahead. I want to hear your explanation of the games. Newscaster and Switch Interview.
So Newscaster is basically, as I remember it, and Christine, you know, there's umpteen different ways to play games.
Exactly, but, which is why I want to hear you explain it, because it's fun to hear the differences.
Well, how we played Newscaster in Chicago, and when we, you know, when there was Newscaster and there was Day in the Life Newscaster. So Newscaster was just, we get a suggestion from the audience and we do a newscast scene mm-hmm. of what would happen in the world if that thing were true. So we have an anchor who's sitting center field and is then kind of throwing back and forth to different players. Mm-hmm. And like, there's the old, like Liz Demery, like pounding her chest and, you know, she's in the helicopter doing the traffic and, you know, like there's all those wonderful, stupid, you know, there's the man in the street, you know, of like, what do you think about this situation? Get me out of the street. I'm going to get run over.
Right.
just dumb stuff like that. There was that version. Then the Day in the Life version, you have someone give you all the info for Day in the Life, and then you do it as a news story of how was the rest of the world impacted by Jill's day visiting Chicago.
Nice. Okay.
So that's that. So it's essentially a scene based on a format.
Right. Yeah.
And I can take or leave it. It's fine. It's, you know, I think what annoys me about it is it's such a kind of fast-paced verbal game. But I just so rarely see it done well, because you also need to really understand hyperbole
mm-hmm.
to get it. And it's just one of those games where it's like, I've seen that game workshop so many times and it just still comes out mediocre, you know? And I think one of the things, and I think that's the other thing that like I got from Dave and that I see a lot in Jason now, of like, if the game consistently turns out a mediocre kind of golf clap from the audience,
mm-hmm.
like, it doesn't matter how much you like it. Like, don't like, then do it in a jam, you know, like it's not good enough. It doesn't reflect our greatness.
Okay.
So that's kind of where I'm at with it, of like, it's okay, but it's just the berry's not worth the squeeze on that one.
The berry's not worth the squeeze. That's a good one.
Does that make sense? I think that I might be ruining that saying.
I don't know. That's my new saying, though. Okay, so then Switch Interview. Tell me about Switch Interview then.
But Switch Interview. Oh, I'm sorry. I beep and love it. So we have two chairs, and then we rotate the entire cast through the two chairs, and stage left chair says the show that we're doing. So welcome to Books Tonight. And, you know, and then asks a question mm-hmm. to the guest, right? And then the guest has to do a bit, right? They have to do some kind of bitty response to that.
Right.
usually gets a tweet from the ref, you know, as kind of our blackout. But then right chair then moves into left chair moves off.
Right.
And now the next person comes into right chair, and now you repeat the process, right?
Mm-hmm. With a new suggestion.
With a new suggestion. And that's, I would say, this game is all about speed, and where I see it get screwed up is like here's my thing. I'm almost leaving. I don't care who I friend. If your reason for being a ref is that you like stand-up, quit and go do stand-up, please. Like, I'm so tired of the referee stopping a game energy to be like, oh, well, that was interesting. Well, hey, how about we now? Let's just get like a – and it's like, dude, people are putting on their coats. Like, get it out of your mouth and ask for the suggestion. It's not about you. I just want the referee to get that suggestion quickly and maybe get a bunch of them ahead or do a scene from the hat style, mm-hmm. because you need to build that laugh cadence. If you miss that cadence, the switch interview becomes as limp as any other of the games we do, right?
Yeah.
It builds, right? And you got to build that energy with it.
Right.
But once you do that and you're flying, every time you get to be in that chair and like get hit with a suggestion and be funny now about it, that's just a rush. That's mm-hmm. a huge rush.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Well, it's always a rush for it to go well. I mean, how do you pick yourself up from a show that didn't go well? That's the key.
Well, but that's also, I would say that's the brilliance of comedy sports. Sure. So when a comedy sports match is well engineered, it picks you up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's also where a ref and also Mr. Voice, like also the announcer, those roles, like sometimes if a team does a bad scene, if the referee and the announcer let the audience like attack them, right? If they let them, give them a low score or whatever, as much as that might be a little painful in the moment, mm-hmm. the audience feels heard, and then the energy of the show can pick back up again.
Yeah.
Right? It's like this show, the brilliance of comedy sports, and no other improv show for my money can do this, is it self-heals. If you have a bad moment in the show, you don't have to go, oh gosh, you can make a joke of that moment and propel the show even faster forward.
Right. Wow. Boy, you and your philosophy major are just swirling all over the place.
Mediocre white man has opinions about everything.
Always has. Those mediocre white guys always have. Oh, man.
I speak in the manner of my people.
All right, a quick would you rather game with me here. Would you rather, oh, this is bad, lick the floor underneath a refrigerator or the underside of a toilet rim? I think he disconnected.
Outside of the toilet rim or inside of the toilet rim?
No, underside.
I was within the bowl, intra bowl licking. Okay, I'm gonna go with.
Or underneath the refrigerator.
And I can't clean them first, right?
Well, no, you're jumping in here and it's...
You're just getting whatever was left.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go for under the refrigerator.
You've got to go under the refrigerator.
I think you do.
I think you have to.
There's, you know, not to kink shame anyone, but yeah.
Oh, that's a whole other podcast, Matt. Before we go, I want to hear the story behind your nickname, All's Well That. So, Matt, All's Well That Elwell. Tell me about your nickname.
So, in Chicago, one of the things that people do say about Chicago that's pretty apt is that we can be quite snobby about our comedy sports. So, like... ask a Chicago person about vending and they'll be like, what even is that? Like, it's a little effete, right? And so we don't do nicknames in Chicago.
Excuse me,
we don't
Mr.
do
Chicago.
Them. It's like, oh, well, good for you.
Right.
You know, but so I went to my first championship, I think, and I had to come up with a nickname for myself. So, and it was kind of fun because if you remember, like at the time I was getting into comedy sports, there was the Upright Citizens Brigade.
Right.
And everybody was an agent this, agent that.
Okay.
Right. And so, like, I already knew, like, I wanted, like, there was something attractive about having, like, an improv related identity.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the one I chose as a play on All's Well That Ends Well, All's Well That Elwell.
Oh, so you came up with it.
Oh, yeah, I had to. Nobody else would demean themselves to a nickname in Chicago.
All right, I'm just a lowly Milwaukee person.
Oh, my. You know, and it's so funny. And I'll tell you something that really gave me a lot of respect for Milwaukee and helped me realize the kind of myopia. And I would say this is kind of what put me on my trajectory to work for CSZ Worldwide and really have a lot of love for the overall organization, not just Chicago, is back in like, I mean, it would have been before 2005, because that's when we lost this theater. Mm-hmm. We had a bunch of Milwaukee players come down to Chicago and play a match as part of the I-94 Challenge. And, you know, in Chicago, all these Chicago improvisers playing comedy sports were carrying all the IO baggage of like, well, we're not going to play children on stage. And if you play a child, play it at the top of your intelligence. So it's like a genius little human, you know, like we had all these rules around, you know, this kind of sophistication. And so these Milwaukee players come down to us and they play a game and they're playing it and they're all kids and they're stupid kids. Like they're normal kids, right? And so, and I'm watching, I think I was on notes that night, and they kicked our butts. Like they did an amazing show. They played circles around us and they did it doing the kind of improv that we were all raised not to do.
Yeah.
And it really, like, I think that was the moment where I went, you know what? Like, we don't have all the answers here. We certainly tell ourselves we do, but we don't. And that, I think, is what really made me start to really want to understand comedy sports beyond Chicago. And I'm so glad I did.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you have to step outside your own, you know, experience to, yeah, to grow and to learn. Well, I tell you, I could spend all day talking to you and not knowing what you're saying, but it's been fascinating listening to you.
Oh my God.
And your theories and your philosophy. And whew, I'm exhausted. I'm spent.
I'm exhausting. that is something. I now have a psychiatrist's diagnosis to prove I'm exhausting. I am literally it is documented medical fact. I am exhausted. Well, so thank you for hanging in there, Christine. No, I love talking about all things comedy sports.
This was fabulous. I very much appreciate your time today. Everyone, we will be back next time. But Matt Elwell, you've given us a lot to think about. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Comedy Sports Podcast is produced and engineered by Kyle Hannikin. Our announcer is PJ Rockwell. Feel free to like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. Comments and inquiries can be sent to thecomedysportspodcast@gmail.com. Created and hosted by me, Christine Rolo Capriolo. Catch you next time.
The Comedy Sports Podcast is an independent production made by CSC Players. The views and opinions expressed by the podcast host and any guests are their own and do not represent the views and opinions of any CSE location or CSE Worldwide. Vocabulary used by the host and guests is not necessarily representative of the CSE brand.